This sounds like you want to steal my identity and put me in a bag in the river. You ready to start?
Yep.
You're totally ready.
Yep.
All right. Hey, everyone. This is the On Campus Interview Podcast. Yeah, that's it. My name's Eric. This is October 19th. It is McFarland. It is fall break week.
McFarland days.
All right.
Call it what it is, Deets.
Yeah.
McFarland days.
Say it as it is. So basically, we're doing a little bit different show this week. We're essentially doing no work under the auspices of. Is that how you say it? Sure. Why not? Under the premise that you're lucky you're getting a show at all. So that's why there's not going to be segments. We're just going to be like throwing issues out there and talking. And I just moved the mic, which if you listen, it makes a big sound. So I shouldn't have done that. Sorry. All right, but I don't know. Cooch, what are your big plans for this weekend? Let's get that out of the way. Seems reasonable. Seems like a reasonable topic.
Well, I feel like even though we'll keep it right now at the beginning, I suppose, a little law school related, I find fall break a great time to at least start doing some outlines.
That sucks.
You make yourself feel good about yourself. But the best part is you'd spend like an hour or two on it, and then you spend the rest of the day doing whatever you want. But you feel like you're productive. I find that
that's true.
I can trick myself very easily, which maybe isn't a good thing, into thinking I was really productive. But otherwise, gonna relax and just do a little bit at the beginning of the day, but then the rest of the day just do whatever I want.
No, I agree. I like that idea where I can convince myself that I did something. It's like if I wasn't so busy, I could during the summer at least, so Cooch and I, we said this before, we worked at the same internship, but sometimes I'd have stuff that I could take home with me over the weekend. If I did just like an hour of it, God, I felt so good on a Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the man.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Deeds, you are the man.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I don't know. You want to kick this thing off?
Let's do it.
What's your first topic? You want to throw one out there?
Yeah, I'll throw something out. And this is just kind of a broad question, and we can take it whatever way we want to go. But
if this is about zoo animals,
I don't even know what that means.
Oh my God, we're gonna talk about that though. Go, keep going.
All right, you're gonna bring up the zoo animals. Perfect. Well, I'm gonna start with how do you get your news coverage, Deets? And by mean that is, I guess, and I feel that the way I read news, gather information, is much different than how my parents did or do. So. How do you do it?
No, that's totally reasonable. I think, you know what, so I'll start with what my parents, they get our local newspaper. Mm-hmm. It's called The Leader in Hutchinson. And then they also got the Star Tribune. I can't remember if they got it every day or I don't know if they got it every day or like they only had the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then weekend. Sometimes you can do these different plans. I don't know. I've actually gone through a lot of ways of gathering it. For a while, I had a subscription to a newspaper. Now I've kind of stopped that, and now I'm almost straight the internet, and then there's like three or four websites I look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely don't look at CNN. I don't look at like any of the bigger websites. Generally, I'll look at NPR.org, like the Minnesota Public Radio one. Theirs is okay. They have really short stories because sometimes they transcribe from the radio. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have separate stories, but ends up being a pretty good mix of Minnesota news and national news. And then I look at a website called MinPost, which they're like a very smaller operation, and they're only an online news site, but they just have a group of staff writers who basically they do a lot more instead of just like stating the news. Like they'll write about the news, but then like kind of give it some, they'll like usually explore some kind of other avenue of it. What about you?
Because I like my parents are sort of the same. They've always gotten the local Black Hills Pioneer. I call it the New York Times of Spearfish, South Dakota.
Yeah.
But it's just a local paper that comes once a day. And then they have the Rapid City Journal, which is a big newspaper, quotation marks.
The Rapid City Journal.
But then my mom's always gotten the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
So we've always gotten that delivered. And so I kind of grew up with, newspapers.
Yeah.
And then even into beginning of undergrad, I would say I was a slow adopter of online, like, reading.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause for whatever reason, I like stuff in print, like on paper, and so I would read the newspaper in hard copy mostly. And now I've shifted away almost not even to newspapers. Like I'll go on Wall Street Journal website, just go to it and browse like the first sort of the headlines.
Yeah, I understand that.
Or New York Times, but then also I get I would say 90%, I don't know if this is good, from blogs. And so, and I think they're good blogs. They're not just ridiculous blogs. I think they have, you know,
yeah,
they have good advice. And I like how they link to interesting stories, because the blogs are of my interest. But they'll link to interesting stories, but then they sort of add some of their commentary. And yeah. Most of the time, the people I read, I think it's good extra commentary on top of the news.
Yeah.
And so I like that. And so, and I probably subscribe to Google Reader, which is the best thing in the world.
Yeah, I love Google Reader.
I bet there's about 30 blogs, but only about a third of those are ones that like post daily. Some of them post once or twice a week.
Yeah. Can I say, I just want to say that the way I see the news has really changed over the past few years. I used to try and read everything that was posted on every, like, everything that I'd read. Like, uh-huh. I'd try and read the whole newspaper, like, every day.
Uh-huh.
But news has become so disposable to me lately. It's just, like, how many more times can I read about, like, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? Like, uh-huh. If I find that story in a online or in a newspaper, like, I just automatically skip it nowadays. It's, like, so, it's so, these, like, there's so many stories now that are so empty to me. Or, like, X person in GOP criticizes something about the Obama administration. Like, yeah. I'm just not going to read that. Like, I'm never going to read them. Like,
well, and that's sort of the, I think, so going back to one of our previous podcasts, like the Steve Jobs, after you read one or two articles about Steve Jobs, they sort of all blended in.
Yeah.
And so it was hard. And that's why it was nice. And that's what I think blogs help out, is when they post to maybe a story that has a little different take on it.
Yeah.
Which I found really nice. But yeah, I agree. I mean, if something comes up about the financial crisis, it's going to say basically the same things that they've been saying a lot of times for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
And so I'll skip over a lot of that. But one site I've found really interesting is longform.org. And they...
Yeah, you bring that up, but you talk about it pretty often.
They cite, like, theirs isn't really a blog. It's just they post articles.
Mm-hmm.
But they post articles that are more in-depth, because a lot of the news you read, or even blog posts, are short. Because we have short attention spans. We want it quick. We want, you know, just the bare bones of it. But they'll link to more in-depth articles about all types of topics. And so I find that really interesting every once in a while. I save them usually in a folder, and then when I have time, I go back to them. And I found that very useful, because I used to feel like if I didn't read the news right away,
mm-hmm.
I was missing out. But now if I find an interesting article and I don't have time right there, I don't feel like it, I'll just add it to the favorites and delete it as I read through them.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea. I also like the blogs more, too, because so if you're like looking at New York Times, right, sometimes they'll have a really good in-depth article. But, you know, for these websites where they're just blasting through headlines, you know, it's mm-hmm. like if I miss one, I'm not super sad about it.
No.
And it's not like I want to go back and read it a week later, like, because by then it's kind of old. Whereas some of these blogs, they'll, right, they have something more to add to the conversation, so it's a little bit more long-lasting, like it has more value over time.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, oh, this happened at the, like, if it's just a story about this happened here, like, it's just some very basic, like, this event occurred, okay.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
You have to be careful with blogs, and I've tried to be, but you can, if you would look at my blog listing, you would see they sort of have a trend and sort of a direction, like I would say a ideology, but I try to get all sides, because if you're just reading blogs that have sort of a libertarian bent, it's pretty easy to miss everything else. So you have to be careful what blog, because blogs have an agenda. I mean, they're sort of...
Yeah. Definitely.
And so I think you have to be careful with that, but I think blogs are great.
I think as long as you're just... honest, as long as the blogger and you yourself are honest with what this is about, I don't think there's anything wrong with reading things that agree with, that you like.
No, not at all.
To read, not at all. It's a matter of just like knowing that this is the position they take, and I'm comfortable with that. Yeah. Okay, I think it's been it's been 10 minutes on that one, so we're gonna segue into can journalists be neutral? Like, can journalists, even though we just kind of talked about this, didn't we?
Yeah.
I was just going to... That was supposed to be a good segue.
This is a good segue. It's a great segue.
So can... How about just this blanket statement? Is there any journalism that's like basically... What am I trying to say? Doesn't have some kind of subjective view.
So it's just like plain facts? Like,
yeah, like is there a news source where you can be like, yep, this is the one that's fair and equal to everyone, to everything?
No. It's probably the short answer.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good
one. I think... I think it's really hard, even in news. It's to say that it's it'd be just the facts, and yeah. that's, I don't know if, even if we want that exactly when I read a newspaper.
Yeah.
I mean, the opinion section, of course, of a newspaper, it's blatant that they have some agenda. But then if you're just reading an article about, you know, Occupy Wall Street that's just stating facts.
Yep.
You can sometimes, I think, get a little bit about, okay, what's this person's leaning? What do they think of it?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's impossible, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So I'd say no, but you can try to dampen. I guess, as a journalist, I think journalists can dampen sort of their biases.
Try and make it more fair.
Yeah. And I think that comes with recognizing, realizing your own biases. And if are they coming out more so than you might think they are.
What about, so this is just like the last part of it. What about, so we have some situations, I was reading a story today that was specifically about the GOP debate last night, which I forgot to live blog the live blog.
Oh, I know.
Because I would have been like, I could have written things like, oh snap, this live blogger just blogged that Herman Cain talked about Kentucky Fried Chicken. Oh, he just laid it down on Kentucky. Okay. No, all right. But is it ever a journalist's role? So I was reading this story about the debate, and that apparently the whole story was the factual inaccuracies. The title of the story was Facts Take a Beating in the GOP Debate. And they went through some assertions that each one makes, and then they basically, that the candidates were making.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just gave a bunch of information about why is this either true or false, and if it is false, how is it false? Like, how do journalists have a role like that? Should they be doing that, right? Because apparently journalists are supposed to, you know, we do kind of have this view that journalists are supposed to just be reporting the facts to us.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, every time you touch that mic, it makes a huge noise for everyone.
Sorry.
Just like to put it out there.
I don't know. Like, in the sense of the, I guess this, in the sense of a debate, I do think, because I don't think all the statements, well, maybe some of them are, you could call them blatant lies.
Yeah.
They're just, and that's sort of what political debates are, and why I kind of don't like them is you can. It's a they're 30-second statements.
Yeah,
and it's like a one-page article. Yes, we want it short and simple, but there's a lot of subtleties in all these different arguments that are hard to explain in a 30-second. So, explain in a 30-second speech.
Okay, but what is there like a is it like a balancing thing where is there a point where they can go where you get so far from the truth where it's like. No, this is actually a statement where there is no explanation out of this. Like, the only reason you get to make it is because you don't have to explain yourself.
I suppose it depends. Like, if it's a front page of a news article and they're writing about the GOP debate,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, if there was a full statement, I think you can bring that up in an article where it's not pointed out as an article and it's still a fact. And so it's not,
yeah,
you're not being biased. Again, you have to be careful. But I mean, if you say something like, so-and-so said this, however, there are questions about the truth to that. And that's not – and do journalists have a duty to do that? Maybe. And I think there's – right now that you can get information anyway, and so it's going to come out one way or another, whether it's in a regular newspaper, on a blog, on TV.
Yeah.
It'll come out that maybe that statement's not as true. And I guess – does that sort of make sense about how –
No, it makes sense. It's good.
About – and so – and I don't know. I mean, does – what is it last night? Was it Anderson Cooper? Does he have a duty to call him out right there? I don't know. I mean, I find debates ridiculous.
I mean, I kind of wish they would. I kind of wish they'd have like a hard dude like being like, no, explain yourself, young man. Yeah. If you're gonna say that, you better back it up.
Well, and it might be dangerous too for that could be dangerous for like CNN because do they look as if they're supporting a certain candidate of. That they're pushing a certain view because there's definitely people who are going to believe what they say, whether or not. So I think they have to be careful with that. As the person asking the question, you have to be careful.
Yeah, that's true. So I'm just like bringing it like part of it. I guess an example would be like Bachman last night in the debate. I guess made some statement about how what Obama's been doing is going to be the first time that there's been like that Israel and the U.S. have had like a quarrel or like there's been a splinter between us.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was one of the assertions they made, and they're, you know, they just, the story I was reading, there's like, actually Eisenhower forced them to leave Egypt when they occupied parts of Egypt. They're like, Carter had like a problem with them. George H.W. Bush like got, there are all these other times, and it just seems like, I don't know, like, what do you do in that situation where they're, like, making this assertion where, you know, maybe in her eyes, but obviously there's other, obviously there's counterfactual things.
Well, and that's like, I mean, anytime President Obama comes out to talk about a jobs bill and say, we want this bill because it's going to create jobs. Yes and maybe not. We don't know. I think that's part of the problem, too, is it's hard to tell. So, I mean, it's hard to tell because the economy is so complex. When you say this bill is going to create jobs, maybe it's hard to tell. I mean, so I think that's why you can't call them out because it's so complex.
Well, at least I feel like that, though, is kind of different because that is really that is really difficult.
Yeah. No, and I mean, it depends how, like, I didn't see it, so they, like, what does she mean by?
Yeah, I guess I didn't see it either. What
she meant by that this will be the first time there's been a tiff or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And again, it's when you're dealing with politics and politicians, you have to be very careful about how much you read into what they're saying, what it actually means, because again, they give 30-minute stump speeches and they can, you know, it's hard to explain a comprehensive, let's say, healthcare legislation in a 2-minute. There's just a lot of complexity to it in all of it. And yeah. I think that's what sometimes doesn't get talked about. And in a debate or in a political arena, when somebody asks you questions, it's not a good thing to say, I don't know. Even though that's honest at times and it may be a good thing, mm-hmm. It's not good to say, I'm not quite sure. Because then you just look like you're unsure. You can't lead this country.
How do you feel about you being the person who says they don't know? I'm one of the other candidates, and I'm like, dude, Rick Perry, he has no idea. Herman Cain's Pizza Hut, no, his godfather's tax plan, he doesn't know if that's going to work. He has no idea, actually.
See, and I think that's a legitimate thing. I mean, I think that's something legitimate to say. Just be like, he has no idea if it's going to work. It might work. It might not work. So, I mean, it's and that, I think, again, comes down to, you know, what's – people who are going to believe in it have – their ideology says, you know, well, yes, this is what we think the tax system should be.
Mm-hmm.
People who don't like it are going to – I mean, you can find reasons to support it. You can find reasons to not like it.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of that's going to come down to your own biases. And, again, that's recognizing your own biases. About whether or not you don't like it. Do you not like it just because you don't, it sounds ridiculous and it's easy? And it's, I mean, have you really looked into it? I mean, it's one thing, I think now they're starting to look into at least the 999, what it actually entails. Mm-hmm. But just to say a blanket, I don't like it, like, or to, I guess, make fun of it, I think is an easy way to get around having to understand any of it.
Yeah.
Which I think is unfair easy, but it's what makes Colbert and Jon Stewart so popular.
Yeah.
Is they can make fun of it without having to analyze it, which I love Colbert. Jon Stewart, I don't know about.
I don't know about it. He had some good stuff.
But so that's what makes him so popular, because they can do that. So I think it can make you cynical. Just the minute they say anything is just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost at 10 minutes again.
Yep.
Another 10-minute interval. You have something on hand, or do you want me to throw something out
there?
You
got something.
Yeah, I got stuff. So I wanted to know... So this is kind of I have like two things to go with this, but we can just start with how do you listen to music? Like how do you manage your music? Like, I don't know if you're like me, but I have a ton of music and it's basically, I use it primarily on my computer, but I'm just kind of interested, like, what you use to like find your music, how you listen to it, when you listen to it.
I would say Pandora is my biggest.
Oh, Pandora.
Yeah, the old school. Now it's weird, but it's like the old school Pandora.
Yeah, right.
It's the old way to do it. That's how I do it. And then what I like about Pandora, not that other, I don't know a ton of other music stations, I guess, but, you know, you find an artist that you like, and then it opens it up to a bunch of different artists. And what I do is I have a Word document where I just store, like, artists' names and a song I like.
Nice.
So...
Yeah.
When I can go on and I'm thinking, oh, I want to look up more of this person's stuff. And so, again, at the time, it's like, I don't have time right now to look into this. Let me just put it somewhere and I can find it later. So that's, I mean, Pandora's the way I used to do a lot of iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
But since I got a PC, I haven't even downloaded iTunes onto my computer.
That's pretty epic.
I know. That's just going back. I'm sorry, Steve Jobs. Rest in peace. too soon.
A little bit. Keep going.
We can edit that out. But
we won't.
So I don't have iTunes on my thing, and so my iPod, if you've looked at it, is pretty, I would say, not up to date with music.
Yeah.
And so, and I mean, it just really depends. I enjoy music, most all types of music I enjoy, so. I wish the radio sometimes would do a little bit better job. It doesn't do
of playing music. Music?
It's just different music.
Yeah, that's true. How many times can I listen to, what's that Blue Oyster Cult song?
Oh, I don't know.
Don't Fear the Reaper. Oh.
How do you listen to music?
There's only so many times.
I know you have some different.
Oh, yeah. So I listen to a lot of music. So I kind of have. Only this past summer I've moved. So I used to be straight iTunes for the most part. And, like, you know, that was just made up of ripped CDs or stuff I downloaded and things like that. Legally downloaded, mind you. Although I kind of wanted to ask about that, too. Like, that we'll get to it. But, yeah, so it used to be a lot of iTunes, but then I started, and I did Pandora every once in a while, mm-hmm. but I was never, like, a big-time Pandora user. I think I used it when it was, like, if it could ever have had a fad phase, like, where it just popped up and, like, everyone was like, internet radio!
Uh-huh.
Then I was like, yeah, internet radio for life. But I don't use it very often anymore. Primarily, though, so just this past summer, I started getting into these streaming services that have popped up, I don't know, in the past couple of years. Maybe you've heard of them. Like, one's called Ardio. That's what I use.
Yep, you've told me about that.
Zune, the Zune Pass, Microsoft's program, they used to have one, although it looks like they might get rid of it. And Spotify, you've probably heard of these. Mm-hmm. But they're basically, right, they buy licenses, so they buy a right to use the songs from the record companies, and then basically they provide them all on their website for you to just listen to,
mm-hmm.
right? And so maybe like 5 years ago, or, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, this was really hard to do because either you didn't have a good enough internet or there's some kind of limitation on like when you could be on the internet, whereas now, right, you have basically, right, on people's smartphones, you always have access to the internet. Wireless is pretty pervasive, at least in like bigger cities and things like that, and the speeds are good. So these like have only really had the opportunity to come up recently. But yeah, I tried out Ardio this summer, and that's been actually it's $10 a month, I think, to get so you can stream music on your computer and on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty nifty because it's really nice for, like you were saying, I would say music discovery.
Yeah, that's like, a good way to put it.
Yeah, I also have one other thing that I'll talk about in regards to that. But, right, music discovery, right? I can try out an artist and see how much I like them.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, so, for instance, there's this group I found called Yuck that I really – and they sound a lot like a 90s, like, rock band, like, mm-hmm. post-classic rock, but – kind of grungy almost.
Yep.
And I really liked him. I heard him somewhere. I'll talk about that in a second. But I've been listening to him on audio, and actually last night I'm like, okay, I'm buying these guys' MP3 album off of Amazon. Because at some point, right, I'm like, because on audio, right, I can listen to it on my phone, I can listen to it on my computer, but I can't put it on my iPod, which that's what I use when I bike and do those things or run or exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally like pulled, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna download it, and I've had all this time to, you know, figure out, do I really like these guys, do I really not?
Yeah.
In terms of, so that it's actually, and what's kind of nifty about it is it lets you basically build a library. You can save songs, you can create playlists, you can do everything you'd do in iTunes for the most part. To be fair, they don't have every song ever written.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right, the Beatles just got on iTunes recently, and iTunes is the most profitable music store in the world.
Yeah.
No one else has the Beatles rights to Beatles music basically to put on the internet. Although, I don't know, maybe Amazon does. I really don't think so. I think iTunes is the only one. But the way I discover music is I've recently found, this was just this summer too, but a website called Turntable FM. And basically, you go in and all it is a list of rooms. They call them rooms. And they're not unlike chat rooms. They're basically a chat room. And you enter the room, and basically there's 5 slots for people to be DJs in this room. And people pick songs to play, and you cycle through these 5 people.
Really?
Yeah, and so there's a chat function, and you can star people, and you can like songs. And there's links in the website straight to Ardio and iTunes and all these things. So if you want to go buy the song, if I wanted to add it to my Ardio playlist, I can go. It'll bring me straight to Ardio, and I can add it.
Hmm.
But it's just kind of neat because the rooms are themed. So, right, a room that I would spend a lot of time in was Indie While You Work was the name of the room. So it was pretty cool just because, and like you have like an ID on the website and people can rate you up or down. So if you have a higher rating, if I go into a room with like 100 people, if I have the highest rating, I'm going to get the first opportunity to DJ in this room. I mean, there's hundreds of rooms, so you can go all the way down to rooms like, you know, with two, like one or two people. Like, you could go in with one other person, and uh-huh. then you two are just playing music back and forth. But I mean, it's interesting because they have all the music. I don't know what their copyright is like, what their licenses are like.
Yeah.
Because there's all you do is search for a song that you want to add to your playlist, and mm-hmm. better yet, if they don't have it, you can upload a song that you own if they don't have it in their database.
Interesting.
No, it's pretty cool. I don't know. I don't have a lot more to say on it. I use iTunes. I'm addicted to iTunes because I think you can pull podcasts from iTunes, the easiest of basically anything.
Well, the podcast on that function is great.
Yeah. Also, if you have an iPod, it sure is useful to use iTunes.
Yeah. I mean, it is the best way.
Yeah. The management system is good.
Mm-hmm.
And so in addition to that, I mean, kind of what do you think about downloading music illegally? So let's just start with this broad assumption that there's a lot of people in our generation who go through a phase where they do it,
uh-huh.
right? I'm not going to say anything about myself, but only recently have I become very against it for the most part. Like where now, yeah, I mean, now I'm just very much in favor of people paying for their music. And maybe that's just because I listen to a lot of bands who aren't that huge. So I know like when they need... they need the money, right? Like, if I want them to succeed, I should, you know, I want people buying their stuff.
Yeah, I think, I mean, first off, it's illegal. So, yep. I mean, technically, you are technically stealing. I think am I against it or for it? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And I know of some...
Keep in mind, you're a law student.
past articles, I've read some past articles about how actually... things like a Napster or a LimeWire have helped small bands get out there because I'm not going to buy their music, but if I can get it free, it's going to make them bigger.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
So it's using that function. I think they've done a better job, like the iTunes model, the 99 cents for a song, because yeah. I can still remember buying CDs where two of the songs were good and the rest I didn't care about, but you yeah. paid $20 for a CD. It's against the law. You shouldn't do it, but people are going to do it. And I think, how does the music industry adapt to that?
Yeah.
But the other day I was watching a thing on, I think, the Discovery Channel about Steve Jobs and how he wiped out the traditional record stores. Like yeah. he wiped them off the map because I'm not going to go to the store to buy a CD. So I think as it gets easier, you know, when you get the iTunes or you get other things where I can buy music easily,
yeah.
then maybe I'm more prone to do that. Like, I've seen myself buy. Not because I don't have iTunes, so I haven't done it lately, but or downloaded illegal either. But because I have Pandora and stuff, I don't find myself really buying songs because I just go on Pandora or whatever on. That's what I'm going to listen to.
Yeah.
And when I'm in the car, it's either the radio or usually when I'm driving, I go with podcasts. I don't go to music. I drive when I'm driving long distances. It's podcast.
Yeah.
But it's how you adapt to that, and I think. As it's gotten easier to get music online, to buy it online, maybe you're more prone to do that. I don't know. I mean, and I think it's hard to police against it, I think.
Yeah. No, I agree.
You can police against, I guess, the big ones, but, I mean, they're just going to keep popping up, and how do you keep enforcing that? So yeah. I think as a music industry, you have to try to adapt to that and figure out a way to work within the system.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of talking. That's exactly what you were saying about how making it easier. How I've heard of phrases, right, make access to these things, like, mm-hmm. way easy. And I think, like, things like RDO, mm-hmm. that's in the right direction, right? Because maybe I'm not willing to buy... So they're, right, I feel like there's this class of artists where people say, you know, I'm not sure that I like them enough where I want to buy it, but I do really want to listen to it, so they fall in this middle ground where I guess I'll illegally download it because, uh-huh. because right, I'm not depriving them of money because they were never going to get that from me,
mm-hmm.
but there's no reason for me not to. Like, I still want to listen. I don't know. But, yeah, access, right, being able to download songs, being able to try things out, making it easier for people to get them. You know, using torrents, downloading things illegally is not actually that easy and not that much. I think people are fairly uncomfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And I think most people would actually buy things. Like, people will buy it if it's reasonably priced and easy to get.
Yeah.
And that's, people appreciate that.
And I think, like, the single song.
Yeah.
I don't want a whole CD. I want a song I hear on Pandora. And I don't want to have to go buy his whole CD, because yeah. maybe I don't like all the songs. I want to be able to buy that one song.
Yeah.
But then maybe find some of his others. And that's what's nice about, you can search, like, I search YouTube for like an artist, and it'll pop up a bunch of his different songs.
Yeah.
And so I can listen to them there and then see, oh, maybe I want to buy it that way. So I think the model of buying single songs is a great way to go, and it makes it easier. It makes people maybe less likely to go download illegal stuff when they can just buy one song for 99 cents seven instead of having to pay the $20. I do find it interesting, though, that like on iTunes, that I think every song is 99 cents, no matter who you are. So you're a smaller band, it's 99 cents.
Yeah.
You're some huge Rolling Stones, it's 99 cents, which is interesting in a way that they don't.
Oh, that they all.
They're all 99 cents.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I think that's the right policy, though.
Oh, I think it is, too.
They don't want people being surprised. Amazon, though, they'll actually, they have a ton of deals. Like, they'll have a ton of specials where you can get, like, albums for a dollar or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Although, right, they're in competition with iTunes, so they're doing whatever they can.
Mm-hmm. I read it. Just in a little aside. Read a
segue.
Interesting article, and I wish I could remember the whole thing. It was called The Great Tech Wars of 2012.
Yeah.
And it was about Amazon, Google, Apple, and Facebook. And they're ever closer to, like, just how they're competing against each other, and when they say they're not trying to compete against each other, they really are, and how they're trying to get on each other's territories. And it was, I wish I remember more of the article. It was from the long form. It was a long article. Very interesting and it was in Fast Company. So if you're into it, look for the Great Tech Wars of 2012.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. It sounds interesting. Do you have another topic? I'm sorry.
Another topic.
Right. Our 10-minute mark.
Since, you know, usually in the minute, you know, let's go, I'll bring it back to sort of the law school.
Okay.
Oh, you don't sound like
No, innocent. No, I'm kidding. Go.
Okay, just quick, best and worst part of law school that you think.
At this point, I feel like the best is that it gives my day-to-day life, like, a lot of meaning. Right? Like, I'm always busy. I always have something I'm doing, and I always have something that I'm working towards in a way, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think goals make humans really happy, make people, like, really happy.
Oh,
like,
I
have a set goal that I can complete, like, that's a very – it's meaningful for me doing things to get up to that goal.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, like, making it to an exam or finishing it, like, every day I have – right, we have homework assignments every day, and it's like once I complete that, I have a feeling of accomplishment. And it's not something that I need to do on my own to create. In the past, if I have a job where it's like – right, it's just an ongoing job. It's harder to have those like miniature accomplishments occur every day.
Yeah.
I don't know, that's like not very law school related, but that's like this very, I feel like that's an answer that you wouldn't expect, that it, you know, provides these little successes each and every time. It's not just like,
yeah, cuz I mean you're technically learning a new whole subject area.
Yeah.
At least once a semester, and really, yeah, like you said, every day you're learning something, you're adding on to like this learning thing that's maybe not known. For me, I'd have to say, I think it's the constant, sort of, constantly being unsure about yourself, which doesn't sound good.
Feel sad.
But, and it sort of comes back to the, you have little goals, but there's just constant achievements of, oh, now I understand that.
Yeah.
And that makes you feel good. Like, you get this hard, complex topic, and before it might have sounded complex, but when you get towards the end, you're like, oh, that's simple. So when I look back on first year, I'm just like, oh, some of that stuff seems really simple.
Yeah, and that's feels a lot of it is.
Really good. But then at the same time, is there's not a ton of concrete answers in law school, which I kind of like.
Yeah.
Because like we were talking about, there's not a lot of concrete answers in life to get
all
deep on you. But I enjoy that. I enjoy sort of, because I think myself, sometimes I can become sort of sure of myself at times.
Yeah.
And it's nice to sort of be put in your place, I think, every once in a while.
Worst part, you know, maybe that I feel like we learn so much that I have a lot of uncertainty about, man, what should I be getting ready to do in the workplace in the future? Like, what should I be bringing with me? What should I be prepped? Like, I sit in evidence and, you know, I feel like, dang it, this is going to be also important if I'm ever in a trial. Like, all of this will be relevant, or all of this will be useful. And it's like, you know, then there's other classes, though, where I'm, like, in property. I'm like, this could be useful someday, but I'm not really sure when. I'm not sure if that'll ever come up for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of uncertainty about what should I be bringing with
me? How does this fit into my life? And am I going to be able to transfer this into the real world? For me, and this is more specific, I hate the way we do exams. I really wish it was more of a take home, even if it's you get 2 days to do something, and you're forced to, you get this many words, you get this much, and you have to turn it in, because then you get to think it through. And I think you can, because I think what a lot of lawyers do, what you do in general is you have to write a lot.
Yeah.
And being a good writer is so important. And if they do that, and professors comment on that, you can learn. I mean, if you're getting docked off partially for what your, you know, your style.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get docked off for that in the real world, not with points. But when people look at your paper and it's not well written, they're going to make judgments about you. Yeah. They're going to make judgments about your intelligence, whether or not you're a good lawyer or whatever you're doing. So I feel like we should be judged on that now in a more controlled environment where it's not a make or break.
Yeah, where they can help you out.
And I just don't understand what's the point of making people cram for all this stuff. Because, you know, people, I guess you could say the final exam is who's the most prepared. And so, you know, you can say who's most prepared. But I think the people who are most prepared still are going to do the best on the take homes compared to the people who aren't prepared. I mean, you're still going to need to make outlines. So you
can definitely
condense it down. You're still going to work hard. But it puts it into more of a general, and it would, I think it would just make it easier on a professor. If I'm a professor, oh man, that's so much better when I say you have this many words. So pick your topics wisely.
Yeah, so make it well.
Pick your words wisely, and I think that's what I would rather do. But I just hate, you know, it's like just write a bunch of mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, as fast as you can.
Yeah, and show that you can make arguments on both sides as quick as possible. In a somewhat coherent manner, and that you remember the rules. It's just because in real life, you're not going to do that. I'm going to be able to go to my, be like, oh, I think this is what this means, but let me go to my book and check, check.
No, that's totally, and that's right on. I think so. I feel like in a way they're just like trying to test, like they're like trying to say to you in life, a whole bunch of people are going to talk to you all the time, and a whole bunch of issues might run past you. Can you find them? Like, are you going to remember a certain issue if it comes up?
I just think it's because it's what's been done for so long that it's like, what's, why change? I think that's part of it. it's easier, why change now?
I also like the social aspect. I just come here so I can hang out.
Oh, yeah, I do like the people.
That's the only reason why I'm in law school. I just want to hang out.
I think that's the biggest lie I was told, that the people in law school are, to use a better word, not nice or unfriendly.
Jerks. Yeah.
There's probably people that aren't friendly here, but most people I see, like, I like walking down in the basement and seeing people that I know and sitting there. You can waste a lot of time, but...
And I do.
But it's nice.
Next topic.
What do you got?
I don't know. Did you hear about... So this is going to be small, maybe, but did you hear about this... Did you hear about the zoo? The animals that got out of this zoo? Apparently it's really sad because this is someone else I was talking to. They told me that I guess the zookeeper committed suicide and opened the gates, and now there's animals running around this town.
Where?
I don't remember. I didn't look that closely. It was on the radio this morning, but then I didn't know about the suicide part, so that's kind of sad. Because at first I said it was kind of like a 90s children's cartoon where, like, yeah, this would be really great if I had, like, four friends who are off for the weekend, and this is their adventure from Friday night to Sunday evening. Like, whoa! We gotta trap all the animals and get them back. But it turns out, actually, I think they're like police are like driving around shooting the animals. That's so depressing.
Oh, that is depressing.
We're gonna ruin the whole day, Eric. We're gonna ruin the whole podcast.
Man, think of like the little kids. That'd just be traumatizing.
Oh my gosh,
kid.
I don't even know what you'd do.
I haven't even heard of that.
Okay, that cannot be our topic because that was just that's not worth anything. You have ask some of your other stuff.
Let's see. Here's something like what's the best animated movie you've ever seen?
The best animated movie?
Yeah.
Today I walked into a class and basically just stated out loud to everyone that I think Transformers 3 is the worst movie of our generation. That's not it. That's not my answer, but that is so true.
Is that the most recent one?
Yes.
It is pretty bad. And I'm a huge Transformers fan.
Transformers 2. What's sad, though, is that one I feel actually reels it in a bit from Transformers 2, which is way probably worse yet.
Really? I like Transformers 2. I thought Transformers 2 was pretty good.
All I can say is that in Transformers 3, though, that they give the Transformers hair to show their age. An old robot has a beard. What? He's a robot. God! So mad.
They couldn't show the age in some different robot type of way. Well, they had to give it a human character. They had to give it more human characteristics other than the fact that it could talk.
Other than the fact that giant talking robots is absurd, giant talking robots with facial hair is far worse even more in absurd. So many ways. I feel like Pixar hits home runs like every time they do a movie. Like I enjoy them almost really? Every time. You don't think so? Screw you, Cooch.
I think they did before the early ones.
Which ones do you think were Story. Bad? Okay. So let's leave Cars out of this. But
name some other Pixar ones because I can't think of any. Like I thought Ice Age was good.
Yeah, you know what? That's actually one I never saw.
I love Ice Age 2, and I think there's a 3. Not good.
Yeah. Okay. Toy Story was amazing.
I think first off, Lion King. I think by far the best animated movie.
That's definitely. So I always wonder if I'm just looking at it through kids' goggles because Lion King and Aladdin were two movies where I've watched them as a child. I don't know how many times I sat down in front of those movies.
Oh, and I think the Lion King, I just saw it in 3D. I spent the, $12?
So awesome.
I mean, was it that much better? I don't know. But it's so good.
You had a whole other dimension to work with, so yeah.
But like for Pixar, what are some recent ones?
WALL-E, what did you think about?
I haven't seen WALL-E.
Okay, so.
But even, what's the one with the one with the balloons in the house?
Up. You didn't like it very much?
See, a lot of people like that.
I thought it was pretty good.
It was all right. And it was heartwarming.
I was less impressed by the. I was less impressed by the ending. Same would go for WALL-E, actually.
Yeah.
What I like about some of these Pixar movies though is they're getting really good at telling a story with absolutely no dialogue for a while. In Up, there's like that whole beginning sequence that's like so depressing.
Oh yeah.
But there's not a lot of dialogue in there, but you get so much of an emotional reaction out of like this time that's like nothing's happening. WALL-E's very similar. In the beginning, there's like it's like a 20-minute stretch where there's no one talks, there's no words, but things are happening and it's entertaining. And
maybe you know more about this, but I feel like Pixar, all their short films, most of them are dialogue free, aren't they? Or a lot of them?
I think so. Yeah,
are dialogue free?
Other than like making little noises, but that's
yeah,
not
they're
really
dialogue free, and they try to tell the story, which is not, it's good. I think it's artistic.
Yeah,
but I don't. I just like Ice Age. I really like Toy Story. Was good. They got progressively worse as they went on.
Yeah, I think I sort of like Toy Story 3, but so I feel like anything where you've got an original that was really good, anything following is going to be, especially in a situation where Toy Story is surrounded by nostalgia for me. So anything that comes later is never going to live up to the magical Toy Story that I imagine it as.
Are there any good animated sequels?
Because
Lion King 2 and 3, Aladdin.
Aladdin 2? King no. Of, no. What was Aladdin 2?
Return of Jafar?
Oh, Return of Jafar, yes.
And then there's a third one.
Okay, Return of Jafar, if you go back and watch it now, that movie's like, it's like 70 minutes. It's like a little over a TV special length. Like, that it seriously could have been a TV-only movie. Like, can we fill an hour gap with this?
Did it go to theaters?
I think, maybe. I don't know.
It just went straight to
I hope
VHS.
Not. But that's the one where the parrot becomes good. He like becomes a good guy.
Yeah, I remember watching. I can't remember, but like Lion King 2, pff, terrible.
Yeah, that's a good question. I can't think of any.
Toy Story 2, I didn't mind, but I mean, Toy Story 1's way better, hands down.
I mean, Pixar. I feel though, like they kind of treat their sequels better. Yeah. Maybe.
Is Shrek a Pixar?
No, Shrek is DreamWorks.
Okay.
Okay, actually, I thought Shrek 2 was pretty good.
Yeah, Shrek 1, Shrek 2, Shrek. What is it? They have 4? Shrek 4 was it?
I'm sure they did.
That was terrible.
Do they love money? Then yeah. Yeah. Although Shrek 2, I started working in a movie theater when that movie was in theaters.
Uh-huh.
That movie, so I started in August, I think, like August, September.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because on my year anniversary of being at that movie theater, it was in theaters. It had come back, but it had left, like, it was there for like another 6 months.
Uh-huh.
It was, all I'm saying is that movie was in theaters forever. Like, it was so popular that, oh my gosh. that movie made so much money. It was disgusting.
Oh, yeah, they all do. So, yeah, I don't know.
You ready to move on?
Yep.
We can do, like, one more topic if you want.
Yep, you pick it.
Dang it, I just had one in my brain, and now I'm losing it. Let's burn time quickly.
Oh, here we go. I'll burn time. I was thinking about this. I was actually going to... If I was a live blogger, I would have live blogged this last night. Not against just my own live blog. But back to Herman Cain's 999 plan...
Mm-hmm.
Don't really have an opinion on it. I don't really care, but I do have, I guess, one thing. I'm against it because if it got enacted for some reason, which never would, but if it did, it would just totally ruin my tax class that I'm in right now, and that would just be ridiculous. I just spent a whole semester, and that gives me a competitive advantage against other people because I took tax and have a minimal understanding of the tax code at least. And if he incorporates that, it changes everything. It's like taking the Constitution and ripping it up and writing a new one, and then my con law class is out the window. Ain't happening.
Thanks
so
a lot.
Tax code, you get more complicated and more ridiculous instead of easier and simpler.
I want this thing to be like a circus. Yeah, I want it to be like a corn maze.
Just ridiculous. Which I think it'd be fun too to write regs.
That would be awesome.
Like implement like statutes that are just vague, and so you just get to implement like this is what it means.
Yep, this is off the rails.
And why does it mean this? Because we said it.
Yeah, eat it. Okay, I thought of the issue. This is the last one. Best three television shows in like the past 5 years. Let me just put the contenders that are out there. Like I wanna include shows that are like in their 5 to 7. They're in their 5th to 7th season right now.
Uh-huh.
So think like The Office, Parks and Rec. We can include Modern Family. That one's pretty. That's season 3?
They're season 3.
Yeah, they're
Parks
they're,
and Rec is season 3 too. Parks and Rec is relatively new as well.
Yeah, I consider those are all in the running. But like House was okay. Just anything like in the past decade, like things that have come out.
So are these like any type of TV show that came out?
Yeah, anything that you really like. I want to put I really want to put Parks and Rec on this on like the table.
Oh yeah,
I'm loving that show right now. Community though came out. What else? House was in this recently.
I haven't seen. Well, I think you got to think of some of the reality shows. So one I would put up there.
Reality shows. What?
Top Chef.
Ooh.
I think Top Chef is a phenomenal.
I haven't watched a lot of Top Chef.
I mean, it's great. I like some of the earlier stuff. Now they kind of like now there's the old one. I think the last one was desserts. So they just do desserts. The old ones didn't really have a theme, I guess, other than who wants to be the top chef.
Yeah.
Now they're kind of getting theme, which I don't know. But some of the early seasons, just great. Because it's amazing how fast these guys can cook and what they can cook and the time limits.
Yeah, it makes me jealous, kind of.
So that's, I don't know if it's a top three, but I think it's one, at least reality-wise, compared to a lot of the other reality ones.
I find it interesting that's like the first one you bring up, because you super love Modern Family.
Modern Family is going to be up there.
You just love it.
I think you have to put Office in there just because of – I think recent Office isn't as good, but old Office.
Oh, yeah. I love season 2 and 3 of that show.
Mm-hmm.
I think that show, like, really hit the wall when – once Jim and Pam are together.
Yeah.
That was, like, my plot that I actually cared about. I think this is probably true for a lot of people. But then after that, it's like, well, what are we going to do? I don't know.
Yeah. And I found – with The Office, that I think some of my favorite episodes are first off when Dwight is taking a lead role.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I think he's one of the best characters on there.
Oh, no, he's funny. I like him.
I think he's good. And I think when him and Jim, because season 1, I feel like, there's only like 6 episodes. I feel like everyone had some type of Dwight versus Jim.
Yeah, where they're getting into it.
And I could see how that could get old. You can't do that every single episode.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy that.
Have you seen the episode where they're throwing Kelly's birthday?
They're throwing
a birthday party for Kelly, and Jim walks in. Dwight's blowing up these balloons.
The like gray balloons.
What is the sign? It is your birthday. It's a true statement. You can't even put an exclamation point.
I think, but Parks and Rec. That's just great. Because it's literally the same concept as The Office. The exact same concept, other than they're, instead of being in like a regular, just private business, they're in a government.
Yeah, I think the humor is pretty similar. Like, similar-ish.
Yeah. But it's just, I don't know, I think it's just hilarious.
Did you watch any How I Met Your Mother? Have you watched that show?
No, I've heard good things, though.
Oh my gosh, you need to watch that show. Because it is amazing. It's like right in line with all of these shows. Like, mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
And I think one other, and actually yesterday's show, The Colbert Report, I think.
Yeah, that show's just, like, on running, though, right?
It's sick. This is a 6-year
yeah.
couple.
I, like, fall in it. I really fall in and out of Jon Stewart and Colbert.
I don't ever watch Jon Stewart. He put me off.
He annoys you.
He annoyed me a few years ago.
Mad.
But Colbert, I just absolutely love. I think his show is great.
I'm trying. Is there a point for you when you're, like, the show's gone on? So, if you know, I don't know if you know anything about, like, in like Japan, like, so like there's a lot of anime that goes on television, and a lot of times they have a very solid beginning and end. That's actually not as true anymore, but there, that used to be the way it was, right? Like, where this show is going this many episodes and that's it. Do you wish like sometimes we'd do that? Like, I like The Office still. It's pretty entertaining. But I feel like it's slow. It's right. It's slowly diluting its enjoyment. Like, I'm slowly being robbed of my enjoyment of it. Like, as it gets more and more like away from what I don't know. Like, what I really liked about it, like back in the day.
Oh, I think so.
To be honest, I feel like The Office is doing it better than anyone else. But an example I would have is like House is a show that I really liked for a while, and I mean I still really like it, but it's like. This season is, I don't even know, it's like the sixth or seventh season, but it is so, like, insane where the plot is now. Like, it's so far from what it used to be that it's like, can't you guys, like, just please end it. Just please be done.
Yeah, and for what The Office, what they have done is they create, like, mini-stories. So, thinking back, it was when Michael Scott quit and they had, like, the Michael Scott paper company. And that went on for a few episodes. They have, like, a mini story in that. And then they have the mini, like, Pam and Jim.
Yeah.
And now I guess their mini story is, what, Andy as the...
Is the bot. I mean, though, they're, like, right, they're almost in a completely different situation because they're, like, wow, we need a new lead. And this is... It seems like that's, they're, like... Not only are we trying to build him up in the show, like, for the characters, but also, seriously, we need a new lead actor for the show and... Yeah. Ed Helms, you're it, man.
And it's hard, too, because you almost have to add something new because you sort of can come to expect what's going to be said by who's going to do what.
Yeah.
And so I think you have to end it at some point. I mean, you just... And it's just different without a Michael Scott. It's just... I don't look forward to The Office as much as I used to. Now I look forward to the Parks and Rec and the Modern Family.
Yeah.
And I think... I like Modern Family because it is. It's just... You know, it's different than the... I mean, it's the mockumentary, but it's just a different form of... Than The Office of Parks and Rec.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It still feels fresh. Especially, I feel... Here's my belief that the second season of any show is their money season. Like, that's the best season of every television show is the second one.
Yep.
Because they've gotten some of the first show... The first season weirdness is gone. At this point, you're comfortable with all the characters.
I think Parks and Rec is just... I think this year is shaping up to be really good.
Oh, my gosh,
Their past couple episodes have been really good.
Hypothetically, like, there could be a situation someday in Modern Family where, like, what if, like, some actor's gonna leave the show and they just, like, write them out, like, he moves away. Like, that's gonna bum me out so badly.
I like when they write people out. It's interesting to see how they do that.
No, it's so dumb.
I think it's interesting how they do it. I think people need to, in these ones, they need to die more often.
Yeah, we need more character deaths.
But, like, for Modern Family, it seems like they wrote out what that one girl's boyfriend.
Like, oh, yeah, range. But at least we didn't, like... I wasn't that attached to him.
No. At first, I thought in Parks and Rec they were going to write out Ron Swanson at the beginning of season 3 for some reason because he, like, ran away.
Oh, yeah, I really liked that. Like, that was funny.
I was like, are they going to write him out? He's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, I don't know if that show goes on without him.
No.
That might. You wouldn't have known that The Office would go on without Michael Scott, but here we are.
Not very well.
All right, Cooch, I don't know. That... We did
it's,
totally.
It's McFarlane days. We shouldn't be in here talking.
Yeah, this is the end. It's over.
Have a good McFarlane days.
Yeah, guys, have a good break.
Unless you listen to this and you don't have break, then we're sorry.
Then too bad.
Have fun at work or school or something else.
Yeah, get back to work. Why are you listening to this? Freaking get on it.